Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we are qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London podcast and on our websites guideemily.com
and alexlacey.com for information about our upcoming walking tours and virtual tours, as well as what the blue
always gets you.
The
Michael Blue Bladge.
Oh yeah, you know what it is by now.
It's been quite a while since we've managed to get through this completely.
We're so useless.
So useless. It's ridiculous.
Worst podcasters ever. Anyway, hi,
Hiya. How are you, Alex Lacey?
I'm very, very well, thank you. I've just come back from Greenwich for a little live virtual tour.
Lovely.
It was lovely today, wasn't it? Really beautiful weather.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, although we did get a little bit of snow.
Yes, we're recording this on Monday evening, and we had snow in the morning and then beautiful sunshine in the afternoon.
It was so bizarre. I was standing next to a blossom tree when it was snowing this morning, and it was like the blossom that was like dancing with the snow, and it was like, oh my God, these two kind of juxtapositions are freaking me out.
Classic really British weird. Weather, isn't it? A bit of everything, four seasons in one day.
Yeah.
But yeah, how's things with you? Are you all well?
All well. Been on a couple of bike rides.
Lovely.
Went to a park yesterday, sat with some friends.
It's gorgeous now, the weather is opening up and we can, you know, we can sort of get out there a bit, because I think that's been the kicker, isn't it, this year of being this lockdown, being very insular at home. So it's nice to be getting out there.
Definitely. And we had some exciting information we did something last week, didn't we?
Yeah, we were really excitingly. We were contacted by a blog over in the United States called The Anglophile. And the lovely Ali and Eva from The Anglophile got in touch with us, and we had a really lovely Zoom chat with them, talking about all our, you know, our love of London and the podcast. And we were featured in their very, very successful blog this week, which was really exciting.
Super exciting. They asked some great questions as well.
Really did.
They were like asking us what our favourite blue plaques were in London, and kind of like secrets of London. Oh, it was so much fun.
We got a bit carried away, didn't we? They were asking us where we want to go when everything opens up, and we don't, I think they regretted that because we couldn't shut us up.
So true. I think they were only expecting a 10-minute chat, and we were like, la 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 la.
never underestimate a guide's ability to talk for hours.
No.
So thank you so much, Ali and Eva. I know they listen. So thank you so much. We were absolutely delighted, and we loved the coverage. So thank you so, so much. And if anybody wants to sign up, you can go to their website, which is The Anglophile, and you can sign up on. And it's a once weekly email, and there's a fantastic blog that accompanies it as well. So the website is lovetheanglophile.com. So fantastic. Thank you so much, lady.
Thank you, ladies.
So last week we were chatting all about Greenwich, weren't we?
We were. We had a fantastic talk, which was delivered by your lovely self, all about John Harrison and time and Greenwich Mean Time. Yeah, it was brilliant.
And we did have an email from a listener, from Anne, who emailed in, because we talked about Cloudesley Shovel, didn't we?
Which we is
the one of the best names ever, Cloudesley Shovel.
Lest we forget.
Yeah, forget, poor, never forget Cloudesley. And he was one of the sort of reasons why they started to put a fund together or a board together to try and crack the problem of longitude, because he was lost at sea due to not being able to tell exactly where he was. And Anne said that she mentioned Cloudesley Shovel to her husband, who's very familiar with Harrison and the H4. And her husband said, and this is a brilliant story, that during this ill-fated voyage near the Scilly Isles, which is where Cloudesley Shovel, his fleet ran aground and tons of people died, including himself, a midshipman approached Shovel and told him he smelled land. And the captain dismissed him. A bit later, the midshipman approached him again and insisted that he smelled land. So Shovel ordered him to be hung or hanged. Maybe not the nicest of chaps, but there we go. What a great story. Thank you so much, Anne, for sending that in. I love it when people have a little bit of extra to add to the stories, which is amazing. Yeah,
that's brilliant. Initially, I read it as smell of land. I was like, oh, okay.
Really?
What kind of land?
Smell land, hoy. So maybe you should have listened to him, because the guy knew what he was on about.
Yeah.
So there we go. Thank you so much.
So Cloudesley Shovel.
And he was one of our picks, well, my pick in particular, for Podcast Pedestal last week, which is where we pick our favourite kind of crux points, most important bits of the story, and then you guys get to vote on it. So I picked Cloudesley Shovel because I thought that the fact that he... You know, it was obviously a very tragic event, and the fact that so many of his crew were lost when they ran aground. But it was sort of the reason why the government finally picked up their boots and kind of decided to do something about this problem of longitude rather than letting it tootle along. So that was why I picked him. And what did you pick?
So I picked the Captain Cook quote that you gave. So basically, James Captain Cook took one of the timepieces that John Harrison had created, and he could not rave about it anymore. So this quote kind of really defines how impressed, you know, someone like Cook, who was such a big adventurer and constantly out at sea, gave it the thumbs up, which would have spoke volumes, not just to the board, but just to people in general.
Yeah,
so that was my pick.
That was a great pick. Really good.
Cheers, babes.
You know, we like to.
I don't think you often say that, actually.
Yes, I do.
Just,
come
I
on.
I don't know. There's a weird new feeling there.
what do you think? So, where do you think you are? Do you think you're in with a chance this week?
I do. Do you know what? I'm going to be as cocky as a cockerel and say I think I've got this.
It's been so close the last few weeks. It really has. And I think we are getting into our stride of being a bit closer in our choices. And it is very close again. Not quite as close as last week. There's 4 points in it this week. 46 to 51.
Just four. 46 yeah. to 51. Yeah. Oh, my goodness me. Okay. The cockerel is... taken a couple of steps back.
Slightly less cocky now. Well, you have every right to be cocky because you did win.
Yay! Yes, I am flapping my wings and shaking my tail. That is fantastic.
That's quite the image. amazing. So there we go. You have won this week.
Brilliant.
Is that two in a row or did I win last week? I can't remember.
No, unfortunately not. It's not two in a row. It's, you won last week. So what is it now? I think it's like... 14-12.
All right, catching up.
So yeah, God, you've been ahead for such a long time now.
Sorry, not sorry.
God, you've got so many medals, so many trophies.
I know. I want them all, though. I want them all.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens in this week.
Well, where are we going this week? What's the plan?
So the plan is that I'm going to tell you about something that was great. But as we know in history, a lot of events might be called great, but they're not so great. So the wheel landed in Mayfair, and it actually didn't matter where it landed because I was going to talk about the Great Smog.
You had it anyway, didn't you?
I didn't care because the Great Smog covered not only London, but Essex and Kent and all sorts of places. So when I say Great Smog, Alex, what do you say?
I say Great Smog, amazing. No, Is that a bit more lively? Last week you were not happy that I wasn't lively enough about
your smog. No, I was like, gosh, he's really not into the Great Smog.
Yeah, I wasn't really listening to you, to be honest.
The Great Smog story.
Yeah, Great Smog. So, yeah, what do I say? What do you say in the face of a Great Smog? I'm very excited.
When I say Great Smog, you say... Cough?
No.
Look, don't worry about it. I know you're lost for words because you don't know much about the Great Smog, but it's all going to become clear, my love. Do not worry. Just sit back and relax.
Thank you, Mum. Thank you, Mum.
So the Great Smog of 1952.
1952? My favourite year?
Oh, is it?
No, I'm just going with it.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, it's a very good year. I mean, it's when the Queen, when Elizabeth... you know, came to power. Although she had a coronation a year later, came to power. You know,
the big dictator that she is.
So the Great Smog. It was a 5-day smog from the 5th to the 9th of December in 1952. Okay. And I know you like to call me the Goth Guide, and I do like to talk about macabre and kind of crazy and quite upsetting issues.
I have to tell you.
It is tapping my fingers together. This is a serious thing that happened, and actually looking into it in depth, it's just astonishing how many people passed away from it. And it took a little while for people to put two and two together and realize this is why. So let's go back a bit. In terms of air pollution, I mean, London is not really a city that anybody has said, oh, yes, you know, it's lovely and fresh. You should go to London. You'll get lots of clean air in your lungs.
Go and take the air in London.
Nobody ever says that. No. And actually, I don't know if you remember, but it was only a few years ago when we had a real pollution problem. And there were people that were saying, you know, don't go outside during this week because it's really bad. Do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So this has been going on since about the 13th century. And what happened in the 13th century is people moved from burning wood in their homes to burning coal. And the problem with burning coal is if you're burning coal, it releases sulfur and it reacts badly with fog. And that's where you have smog. So you've got all these kind of chemicals and particles in the air. So if you've got a foggy day and everybody is, you know, burning coal in their houses to keep warm or to cook, when that coal is mixed or the coal fumes is mixed with the fog,
yeah,
it creates this dark, thick matter.
Oh, sounds delightful.
Oh, it sounds absolutely delicious, doesn't it? And it also would have been quite smelly. I mean, there were accounts back in the 13th century that talk about how the air just stunk. And sulfur does. I mean, if you go to, I don't know, if you go to places like Iceland, where you've got the Blue Lagoon, you've got the natural waters, you get that sulfur smell, which smells a little bit eggy.
Yeah, I remember being in New Zealand as well, in Rotorua, where they have that, because it's the sulfur that comes out. Yeah, it's quite pungent.
Yeah, quite pungent. And people just accepted it, you know. And the thing about the fog is, because London, you know, surrounded by low-lying marshes, especially back in the 13th century up until probably about, well, the 18th, 19th century, really. And you've got the Thames here as well. So it causes a lot of fog. You have a build-up. And the fog, it was known as a pea soup or the pea supers. So when it got really smoggy, you would look out the window and say, oh, we've got the pea supers going on outside.
Delicious.
And that's because it would create this kind of green... yeah, get the ladle out. It would cause this kind of green, yellow, hazy kind of colour. So it was known as the pea supers. And in 1661, John Evelyn, who was a diary writer, a little bit like Samuel Pepys, he actually presented to Charles II information about the problem of smoke. And he actually said, you know, if we carry on like this and we're burning so much coal, it's going to shorten the lives of people in London. So people were aware of it. People were aware that suddenly, you know, they were coughing a lot, they were having problems with their lungs, they didn't want to go outside for a long period of time. And then during the time of King James I, there was actually a kind of a bill that was passed to try and restrict people from burning coal. But how on earth, especially in the winter, are people going to keep warm? Are people going to cook? You know, there's not that many options for people back then. So it just continues to happen. And in the 1700s, suddenly, boom, we've got the Industrial Revolution. So there's extra soot within the air. And you've got, you know, these big power stations like Bankside Power Station, Battersea Power Station, where you've just got these huge fumes which are being pumped out. And they say that the coal consumption increased from about 10 million tonnes a year in the 1800s to about 200 million tonnes by 1950.
That's a huge, goodness
me. A humongous increase. And when it comes to smog, people weren't too fussed about it because fog would be around at night. People would burn the coal, so suddenly you have sulfur in the air, which is really bad for you. But when the day would begin, so the following day, there'd be enough heat, even in the winter, to heat up the ground, and then the smog would be released into the air.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, imagine it. I mean, you know, of course, we talk about pollution in big cities, and you, on certain days, you can see a bit of a haze. I mean, London's, I mean, it's not as bad as a lot of major cities because it's very green, but I mean, you can't imagine that thick smog sort of hanging. And I remember the pea supers, well, I don't remember, but I remember someone telling me that the pea supers were so cool because they'd kind of, well, like you said, they were sort of green and thick, but they would, you'd open the window and they'd sort of creep over the sill of the window. That's how thick
they were. Oh God, it's like a Hitchcock movie, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, it really is.
It reminds me of, have you seen the movie called called The Blob?
I haven't, but I feel like it's proper B-grade schlock.
It is so kind of great smog in its like kind of creepiness where you just have this big blob. I don't even know what it is. It's just like this kind of like big bit of jelly that's running down the road after people. But I say running, it's really slow. And just you saying that the smoke and the smog is kind of tapping people's windowsills, it's just quite freaky. Anyway, there were a couple of times, so 1873 and 1892, quite a few people, about 1,000 people during those years, were killed by the smog. Ooh. And this is because the smog lingered for a couple of days and it wasn't allowed to escape because it just wasn't warm enough. It was so cold that the ground couldn't heat up and all the smog was basically just stuck within London.
So it wasn't chasing them slowly down the street like the blob then?
No, it was just surrounding them. It was hugging them constantly.
Lovely.
And you've got people in the 19th century, people like Charles Dickens, people like Arthur Conan Doyle, who writes within their stories about fog. You know, when people are writing about the time of Jack the Ripper, for instance, apparently there was no fog on any of the nights when he was roaming. But in terms of having that kind of scary, that misty feel, a lot of writers would kind of add that in because it just gives that effect, doesn't it?
Yeah, that classic image that you see of him in movies is that he's sort of lingering in a foggy alley.
Yeah.
And people still think, you know, they think of coming to London, they think of it as being this massively foggy city. And I don't really, fog's not something I see that often.
Well,
no. This year.
No, sometimes in the morning it can be quite hazy, but it does clear quite quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not dark fog. It's kind of like, it's as if you're in a white cloud, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's quite different. And then, of course, in the 19th century, you would actually start to see people on people's gravestones, it would say that they were killed due to smog consumption.
Oh, consumption.
I don't think it would actually say consumption.
Get
I think
the spoon
that's
out.
The wrong word. Oh, she just loved the smog, that one.
Didn't get enough of it.
We said, put the spoon down. No, she weren't having any of it. Now, we're now in 1952, and I've told you that, you know, on a couple of occasions, such in 1873, 1892, that the smog just couldn't get released. And this is what was happening in 1952. And it was the winter, so it was in the December period. So people are heating a lot of coal to keep warm. It's a very, very cold time. The matter in the air increased by 50%. And this was on the first day, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger to the point that visibility is just, you know, it's just not there at all. And the smog, it covers about 30 miles wide when it first starts on the first day. So it's taking over London landmarks. You can just see the top of Big Ben's clock tower kind of poking out. You can just about see the top, the little kind of domes on the Tower of London. But things are just starting to disappear, essentially. It must have been so eerie.
Yeah.
Now, the first casualties were actually livestock. Livestock in Smithfield Market.
Right.
So they suddenly noticed that the cattle just fell over. Just, I shouldn't say that. Should I? What's a better way of saying that?
Keeled over.
They keeled over, not fell over. Someone tripped them up. The first casualties were actually the livestock in Smithfield Market. The people that were working there suddenly saw that the cattle just... I don't know why I'm laughing. This is so horrible. I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm sorry.
Because you're the goth guide and you love it.
It's really horrible. I'm sorry. No, they basically keeled over and there was nothing they could do. You know, they couldn't resuscitate them. Oh, don't, you're making me laugh. So this is actually really serious. I don't want people thinking that I'm laughing because the livestock were killed.
But you are.
I really don't want, I'm not laughing about that. I'm laughing about just the fact that I can't get my words out because I'm laughing. It's a catch 22. Now, restaurants originally stayed open, but then soon it was really hard for people to actually read the menu. So they started to close. Theatres originally stayed open, but then halfway through the performance, there was so much smog inside the theatre that they couldn't see the actors on stage.
What?
And people were thinking, I'm sorry, but I've paid to see this. I can't see anything. I can barely see where my Maltesers are. and this happened, for instance, at Sadler's Wells, which is a beautiful little theatre, which you can find over kind of like near Angel, near Islington. And the opera La Traviata was playing and it had to be abandoned after about 15 minutes. And even though it was abandoned after 15 minutes, it took about an hour for people to leave because they couldn't actually find the exit.
Oh my God. So, you know, that could be quite scary, really.
Really scary, because when you leave, it's not going to get any better.
Yeah.
You're going to leave and you're going to come out onto the street and maybe you got a bus there, maybe you walked there, so you're having to try and find your way home. If you're visiting London and you don't live in London, you don't know that it's the second left turning on the corner, you know, where you need to go. So it must have been really, really scary, especially, as I say, for a visitor.
Yeah. Quick, just very quick thing.
Yeah.
Sadler's Wells wasn't actually Sadler's Wells at the time. Sadler's Wells was in Covent Garden and it's what became the Royal Ballet.
Oh.
And that was later in the 50s. That was 50-something, 56, I think. Yeah, so when it's talking about Sadler's Wells, it will be the one in Covent Garden, which is now the Royal Opera House.
Ah, right, okay. That makes more sense because it's opera, La Traviata.
Yeah.
So
Yeah,
okay, nice. Sporting events were also cancelled. I mean, especially if you were playing something like cricket or you're playing, you know, baseball. Not that we play much baseball here.
Tennis.
But, you know, tennis. Can blooming see the ball. You wouldn't be able to get out of the way, would you? It'd suddenly come flying towards your head and you wouldn't be able to dive quick enough.
I feel like there's a new game right there, but just try and shoot the ball and hear how many people you can hear getting struck with it in the smog.
Yeah, of course. Now, quite seriously, lots of trains collided. Now, remember, this is going on for 5 days.
Yeah.
And many people on the first day are thinking, well, you know, it's really hard to see, but it'll be fine because usually we'll wake up the next day and all the smog would have cleared. But this isn't going to happen for 5 days. And it actually, a bit like the Great Fire of London, just keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
So many trains collided. And there were quite a few serious injuries and also deaths due to this. So you don't just have people that are dying because they're intaking so much smog over 5 days. I mean, especially if you had, you know, already lung complications or, you know, you had problems breathing, it would be horrendous. But you've also got kind of things that are happening because of the smog, such as people falling over and really hurting themselves, people suddenly not realizing that a car is coming down the road or a bus or something, people, as I say, that are on a train which has just suddenly collided because of this smog. The tubes kept running because the smog wasn't going down to the underground, but this meant that the tubes during this time were just heaving with people.
Yeah, I bet.
It said that people
it's bizarre now, because you go into the tubes and you go in there and it feels a bit stuffy, so it'd be really weird, the thought of going into the tubes to get some fresh air, wouldn't it?
I would be like, gosh, I can actually see, because I guess back then in the 1950s the air quality down there probably wasn't that great, but it would have been certainly greater than being on the street level. Very suffocating, because already in the tube, you know, you feel a little bit, well, especially if you suffer from kind of claustrophobia, you feel a little bit kind of
packed.
But
it feels
in.
Very sort of recycled air, doesn't it, down there?
It does. That's so right. Yeah, that's so true. Recycled air.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And when people were walking outside, you know, they couldn't see their feet. After about day two, day three, they couldn't see their feet at all. You had most drivers, and it was quite risky if you were going to still drive on the road, most drivers would kind of put their heads out of the window to try and get a better view, because the glass would just be completely steamed up. Plus, it's black. So you don't just have this kind of grey matter. It is black. It is dark. So after being outside for about an hour, you're going to look like Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins, and you've just been up the chimney. You know, you're going to be covered in this kind of soot. So you can imagine being on the car, the front window is just going to be black. A lot of people abandon their cars. So if they're driving along, they're thinking, do you know what? This is just too dangerous. I'm going to have to get out. I'm going to have to leave my car, walk away, and have no idea where my car has been left.
Goodness.
flashlights. So you had policemen who was trying to guide people, guide buses to be parked, holding flashlights. And the policemen, they were wearing white jackets. We know our policemen to wear black, but they all donned these white jackets to try to be more visible.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to add quite a bit to your cleaning bill, but sure.
Yeah, it is, because after about an hour, that Bobby is going to be wearing a black jacket again.
Absolutely.
Planes. Now, quite scary. Planes took off when, you know, things were okay. But when it got really, really bad, you know, after a couple of hours when it first started, planes couldn't land. So it was quite scary. I don't think, from what I've read, I don't think, you know, luckily enough, they had enough fuel to be able to kind of leave London or go wherever they're going to try and get away from the smog and land properly. But from kind of what I read, it sounded like the ones coming into London had to kind of hover for such a long time to try and wait for it to subside, realise it wasn't going to, then head to another airport outside of London where they could land safely.
Wow.
And hope to God they've got enough fuel.
Goodness me.
I read that one taxi that was picking somebody up from Liverpool Street Station to Euston, the passenger actually got out and said, you know what will be quicker is if I if I get out and I'll walk in front of the taxi and I'll direct you. I mean, you think, well, you
could have just
the
object.
But apparently he had a lot of luggage, so it was actually, it was quite good for him, because he wouldn't have been able to carry all of his bags. Goodness. And he knew London really well, so he was able to kind of direct the driver. But how funny is that?
That's brilliant. I mean, that's very, you know, thinking outside the box, I guess.
Yeah. Also, you had this substance. So where you had the smog, if you touched handrails, if you touched the sidewalk and the ground or windows, it was really, really slippery. So crazy how hazard this was. You know, if you were walking down the road, you could have easily have slipped. Plus, it's freezing. It's like below freezing temperatures.
Wow.
And I always kind of like think of smog, I guess, because of the coal. Like, it's quite hot. It must be quite, like, I don't know, heated, but it's not. It's absolutely freezing. Plus, everything's really slippery.
Wow. Sounds really treacherous.
Yeah, seriously. You also had flares. So sometimes, you know, you'd be walking and suddenly see this red kind of light dash up in the sky, trying to get somebody's attention or trying to kind of make sure somebody knew where they were. You had people just collapsing in the streets because their lungs couldn't take it. Birds flying through the sky suddenly came crashing down because they were suffocated. It was just
Sounds like end times, doesn't it?
It really does. And the lamppost, because of the particular lights that they were using at the time, the 1950s, they weren't that bright. You know, even if you stood just underneath it, you wouldn't have been lit up at all. The one place in London that was pretty well lit was Leicester Square.
Right.
So Leicester Square Piccadilly, which is quite well known for all of its advertisements since the early 1900s, that area was a place where quite a few people drove through and actually felt like, okay, this is okay because I can see where I'm going.
Wow.
But as soon as they reach, you know, Trafalgar Square, or if they're going towards Green Park, again, it gets incredibly hard.
Goodness me. Yeah, so just that, those bright lights of the West End kind of helping out. Wow.
Now, there were a few people that did quite well in the smog.
I can imagine that there's a few sort of light-fingered, you know, thieves having a good old rummage in pockets as they go.
Exactly. You are not wrong at all. So many burglars took advantage of the fact that we cannot be seen right now. We cannot be convicted. And there's some wonderful newspaper articles that I found online telling you all about these kind of burglars and break-ins. So I'll just read you a couple. So, for instance, there was a burglar who committed 3 successful crimes in just one night in a block of flats.
He was able to go round.
Well done. Pat on the back for you. A cinema manager was robbed of his day's takings in Edgware Road. Oh. You had a post office safe that was blown open in Isleworth. A jeweller's had its window smashed. This is in the middle of the day as well.
Wow.
You know, which you would never expect.
Pretty brazen, isn't it?
Pretty brazen, but you can't see a thing. So a jeweller had its window smashed. This was in Brixton. And the jeweller's was broken into. A man who was quite a well-known boxing promoter in the 1950s. He was called Jack Solomon. He had his office in Windmill Street, which is over in Soho. He had whiskey, he had a box of cigars, he had £30 in cash taken.
Wow.
And also other people that did quite well were people that sold torches.
Oh, yeah, of course. This is the great British entrepreneur, isn't it? Whenever there's a problem, we'll sell you something to fix it.
Well, it's like this past year, you know, if you sold hand sanitizer, if that was your thing, you know, people would have been laughing at you for years going, God, you know what he does? He sells hand sanitizer. But this past year, you would have, you know, made quite a bit of money.
What I love is the gin distilleries who've switched over to making hand sanitizer. I mean, it's brilliant.
Gosh. Now, in total, and this is just in terms of transport problems, there were 334 emergencies reported during these 5 days. And that is just transport.
Wow.
So there could have been an emergency because somebody lost their car. It could have been that there was a collision. It could have been that maybe there was a problem on the train, or you've fallen on the train tracks or something. 334. It's mad. And the Royal Automobile Club, beautiful building located on Pall Mall, actually put a plea out to all drivers, do not attempt to go out, do not attempt to drive at all.
God. gosh. And again, I suppose robbers as well. There'd have been a great number of abandoned cars for them to then half inch and go and sell on the black market somewhere.
Can you imagine if, like, I don't know, your husband was a secret burglar and you've got all this smog and you wake up on the day where it finally clears and you look out your window and there's like seven new cars just out at the front and be like, where have these cars come from? And it's like, oh, I don't know. It's just like being on a rampage. Yeah.
I don't know, they just turned up here one night. They must all have been abandoned on our front doorstep.
Yes. Brilliant. Oh, God. And I mentioned as well that the smog covered a huge proportion of land. So it wasn't just London. It also covered parts of Essex, Hertfordshire and Surrey. So it's huge. And I guess you would have felt, as I say, quite kind of suffocated even more, knowing that you can't walk or head anywhere quickly and get out of it.
Yeah.
Plus, it's inside your home as well. God, it's just awful, isn't it? And on Sunday the 7th, so this is probably the worst day, and it was just way too thick. Like, no one would have left their house. If you did, you would have been, you know, really, really risking it. And I say that knowing that at the time, people didn't realise how deathly the smog was.
Yeah.
They thought that it was a risk because you might get lost or fall over, but they didn't think taking in lots of that sulfur and lots of that smog into your lungs, they didn't really think that that was that bad for them.
Wow.
And, you know, I mentioned that in the 1700s you had the Industrial Revolution and you had King James I before that, who was trying to kind of stop people from using coal. But because there were so many jobs available connected to coal and the industry, the government, you know, didn't say that it was bad. You know, if anything, they were like, this is a great industry to be in. We love coal. Coal is amazing. So nobody really kind of presumed that because they've been heating a kettle, heating some water in their house, this is the, you know, this is what they're now facing.
Contributing to it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, suddenly we have a light wind on the 8th of December and this starts to clear some areas. It starts to clear Westminster, the East End, not so much because it's so densely populated, which you've mentioned in our previous pods, that you've got so many people using coal.
Yeah.
And different kinds of coal. So people in Westminster, they would have used coal, which would have been... I don't really know the scientific terms, but I guess it would have been less harmful. Whereas the people in the East End, they're using really cheap coal.
Right.
So that kind of stuff is even thicker and much more harsh on your lungs.
Wow. Plus the prevailing wind in London is from west to east. So it's going to dump all that stuff on the East End anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Now, on the 9th, this is where it starts to disappear. So finally, it moves on and it kind of heads towards the North Sea and it starts to kind of eventually disappear and dissolve. And it was only about 2 weeks later where people start to hear word that lots of people have passed away. And of course, this is a time when you don't have social media, you don't press a button and, you know, hear figures and get all that information. So it takes a little while for people to realise that a lot of people have passed away, and it takes even longer for them to realise it's because of the smog.
Right. Wow.
I think it was like something like 3 months after where the government actually said that 4,000 people have been killed. They originally said 4,000. 4,000 people have been killed, and this is due to the smog that we experienced. Which suddenly would have just, you know, if you were out there and no idea how harmful it was, and thinking, God, I spent every day out there.
Yeah.
You know, so scary. But they think that it was downplayed in terms of the numbers. They either really didn't know, or they downplayed it, because it said that about 12,000 people within 5 days actually died from the Great Smog.
Wow, but the accepted figure is 4,000, isn't it?
Yes.
Goodness me. Yeah. Wow.
It's just mad. So, but one good thing that came from it is we suddenly had in 1956, I mean, it took 4 years later, but the Air Pollution Act. Mm. where they're starting to move from coal to electric. They're starting to have zones in the city where you're not allowed to burn coal or fuel. Mm-hmm. And then later people were kind of offered money or offered something, like homeowners were offered kind of grants if they would move away from burning coal and yeah. using other things such as oil or natural gas or eventually electricity.
Yeah. And which is still the case, I think. We're still not allowed to burn coal, are we?
No, we're not. Mm. And things are changing even more so. So I think by like 2025, they're wanting to kind of like really clean up the air. They don't want any diesel vehicles by 2025. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still a huge task, a huge job to be done in London. But it seems like there are more groups, there are more people that are trying to help the atmosphere.
Wow, yeah.
So
we have the ULEZ now, which is the I can't remember what it stands for now, but the essentially cleaner air zone in the centre of London, and we've got the, you know, all the different charges and stuff for polluting vehicles. So yeah, it's still a thing, but coal, I mean, goodness, what a huge impact that had during just those few days on London and the area as well. Wow.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
That's fascinating. Thanks, Em.
Oh, you're welcome. Amazing. Great smog of 1952. Who knew?
Great smog. Not so great, big, but not so great.
Yeah, great in size, not great in atmosphere.
I mean, it's one of those things that, okay, we say this a lot, that we'd love to go back and have a look at something like that. Now, I would love to have a look at this, but from a distance. I wouldn't want to be in that.
Yes.
But I'd love to see. And I have looked up a few pictures of what it looked like, so we'll share some of those to the Instagram this week, because it's quite a... I mean, you really get a sense. There's a couple of pictures there of a bus and a conductor sort of coming through with the flare in front of them, and you can barely see anything. It's quite, really is quite, you know, intense. That level of sort of, thick. You can imagine it sort of tasting, can't you? Ooh.
Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of like, I don't know, like, you know, sometimes you can go on the tube and, you know, you can't wait to kind of blow your nose or kind of like, I don't know, clean your skin or something. And it would have just been that. I mean, not to put anyone off the tube. You know, this is just if like you've been on it all day. But gosh, yeah. I mean, we've come so far. So it's just shocking to think what it would have been like, you know, really 70 years ago.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Podcast Pedestal.
Right. So, Podcast Pedestal. Gosh. What are we picking? This is a tricky one this week because, gosh, there haven't really been any major players in terms of people.
No. Apart from John Evelyn, but that was, you know, kind of pre...
Yeah, that wasn't really the
pre-Great Smog.
Pre that. What are you going to go for, do you know?
You know, I mean, I've been doing it. I'm going to be talking about it a lot. I just haven't thought about it.
It's a tricky one this week.
It's a tricky one. I guess I kind of want to go for like the pickpockets, the pickpocketers.
Yeah, the entrepreneurs.
The entrepreneurs, the people that thought, hang on a minute, there's a positive out of this situation. I think the pickpockets. Yeah, I think I'm going to go for the pickpockets because they're a shafty bunch, aren't they?
They really are. But also, I mean, talk about entrepreneurial spirit. I like it.
Yeah,
I do like it. All right, so you're going for the pickpockets or pickpockets or whatever we want to say.
Yeah.
What am I going for? Oh, this is so tricky. It's so tricky. Now I was wondering about whether I go for when it sort of clears and then the act that comes in, but that's maybe a bit boring. I feel like I want to go for something a bit more along the goth guide set.
Yes.
come to
my side.
So I'm gonna go for the guy who guided his own taxi.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm gonna go for him. Because I think that's the kind of the epitome of it, really, isn't it?
How are we going to put that on the poll, though? What's he called? Like, the taxi guy. Taxi smog dude. Taxi smog dude. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Taxi smog dude. Yeah. Right. Taxi smog dude. Taxi smog dude. Pickpockets.
Yes. Because I think those are quite, I mean, they're not kind of crux in the way of creating anything. They haven't created the situation. They haven't created the...
No, I mean, we could, you know...
Emblematic of it, though. That's
one of us could have gone for coal, but...
Ugh, that's boring.
I think back in the day, you know, probably like pod 3 or 4, one of us probably would have gone for coal.
You would have gone for coal and you'd have lost.
I would have gone for the coal.
And your boyfriend would have raked you so badly.
So true. Gosh, I quite feel like that, hence why I'm behind.
Oh, you're so pretty, though.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah, I'm going to go for that. The smog taxi dude, or whatever we're calling him.
Smog taxi dude. That's what I'm going to call him on the poll.
Yeah, do it.
Smog taxi dude or the pickpockets.
Amazing.
Great stuff.
All right. Before we move on, have you got anything coming up that you want to tell people about?
So I've still got my... my garden tour on the 24th, coming up on the 24th of April at 2 p.m. So I'm selling tickets for that on the londontourgroup.com. And not just yet, we're going to be putting up some walking tour dates on the londontourgroup.com, but we haven't done so yet, so I'll probably talk about that next week.
Righto.
What about yourself?
Well, my virtual tour series is now live. They'll be starting a week on Sunday. Yay! So it's the 4 virtual tours in the series, as we've done before, which is great. We've got Camden, Bermondsey, Secrets of the City, and Bankside in this one. So it's a really good selection. I'm thrilled with what people have picked. So I'm looking forward to them. But I also have now got dates on my website for actual in-person walking tours. I'm going to start them back on the 1st of May. I was waiting for clarification from the government about whether or not we're exempt from the rule of 6, and we are. So I'm going to be starting back with them, but I am going to be capping the numbers at 12 for the time being, because I don't feel comfortable taking any more than that. And we're starting, I'm just putting up on my website as we speak, and the first couple are my Harlots tour, which I'm hopelessly in love with my Harlots tour, which is going to be on the 1st of April in the morning. And then I've got, because it is the weekend of half term, I'm also doing a Wizarding Wonder on the Sunday, which is the Harry Potter film locations. And then we've got Street Art the following week, and there's a few more up there. So go and have a little look if you fancy some walking tours. We're going to be doing those, over the summer. And that's well, from hopefully going forward, because that's what we're going to be doing. We don't have to stop again. And then as we come out further and further out of COVID, I'll increase the numbers a little bit. But they'll still always be kept at a decent number to give a proper good experience on a walking tour. But for now, 1st of May, the first one will be. So all the details can be found on my website, alexlacey.com. Go and have a look.
Brilliant, darling. Very good.
Excited to get back out and get working again.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I go and do some walks and talk to people.
Yeah, face to face.
Yeah, I know.
Face to face.
The Wheel of Destiny.
Okay, cool. So next week, of course, is your pick.
Yes, it is.
So... where do you want to go?
I'm not doing what you're doing, which is picking one that can go for anywhere. I've got my little list I'm still working through. So, where have we been? We've been to Greenwich lately. Where else do I fancy? No, I think I'm all good. I'm all good.
Yeah?
Yeah, let's just go for it.
You ready for it?
I'm ready for it. Go for it.
Okay, off we go. Oh, Alex, I don't think it's been here before, but it's a very important part of London.
Okay.
It's the centre of London.
Oh, yay. Trafalgar Square-y, Whitehall-y kind of area.
Yes, Trafalgar Square.
Oh, brilliant. Amazing.
Yes. So...
yeah, have we done that?
Have we had that before? No.
Gosh.
Actually, I even forgot that it was on there.
Yeah. I think I've forgotten half the ones that are on there, to be honest.
Well, you haven't seen the wheel for a while.
Well, that's true. I haven't seen it. I missed the wheel. I haven't seen it since last summer. right, Trafalgar Square. Okay. Well, there's a ton of stuff we could do there. I'm going to steer away from all the kind of obvious war-y, Nelson-y kind of stuff. We can do all those when we run out of ideas for a podcast later on down the line. I'll tell
Sorry,
you what.
Nelson.
I tell you what, they're just around the corner from Trafalgar Square. It's not quite on the square, but this counts. It's a very famous bank called Coutts Bank.
Ooh, it's a posh bank, isn't it?
Very posh bank.
Very posh.
A friend of mine once, years ago, tootled on into Coutts Bank. Actually, no, I'll tell you that story next week. Can't use up all my material.
Ooh, it's exciting.
So I'm not going to do Coutts Bank per se, but I am going to do somebody linked with Coutts Bank, which is Angela Burdett Coutts, who is a woman who I absolutely love. She's amazing. She's on my Women of Westminster walking tour when we get to the Abbey, Westminster Abbey, because that's where she's buried. So I'm going to talk about Angela Burdett Coutts, who is utterly hilarious. She's a proper sort of... she really goes against everything that she should be doing, and I love her for it. So I'm going to go for her. I'm not going to tell you
too
much.
She sounds fantastic.
Brilliant. She's so, so good. So we're going to have a bit of fun with her next week.
Cool. Yeah. And I'm very excited to hear what your friend did. I mean, I'm guessing it's some kind of like bank robbery or something.
Yes, I do tend to hang out with bank robbers and pickpockets and other, you know, nefarious characters.
Certainly sounds like the start of a joke. My friend walked into a bank.
Yeah, exactly. And the punchline is next week. So there we go.
Nice.
That's it for this week. Thank you all so much for coming along and for listening. I know we had some new listeners as well. So hello, lovely to meet you all. Thank you.
Oh, hello. Hello, new listeners. Thank you for joining us.
And we will be back next week with Angela Burdett Coutts. And until then, stay safe, stay sane. We love you lots. And we'll see you next week.
Take care, everyone. Big love.
Bye.
Bye.